talk that matters. Germ Warfare and Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas on TNT Radio. It's a great pleasure to be with you today. Before I start with my guest, it's an interesting story in Gateway Pundit. The headline reads as such: while the COVID virus mostly spared children, Dr. Fauci did not. Tony Fauci killed from 300,000 to 900,000 children with his lockdowns, mostly in Africa. And on the face of it, it sounds great. I mean, it shows that the mitigation measures have been an absolute disaster, and it's what we have all been saying, you know, since 2020, at least those of us who have been challenging the establishment. And it's sad that there have been so many deaths. But the problem that I have is actually with the first part of that headline. Let me read that bit. While the COVID virus mostly spared children. And that's the part that I have an issue with, because as former guest Dr. Andy Kaufman said, there's this problem in virology, that there's this infinite loop that people can't get out of. I call it the Hotel California syndrome. You can check out anytime you want, but you can never leave. And the problem goes as such: somebody supposedly gets COVID. So in the last 2.5 years, I've been asking the same question that many other great medical minds have been asking. So I don't claim any authority on the statement. I'm just parroting them, but it makes sense to me. And the question is, how do you know? Oh, well, I've got the symptoms. Okay, what are the symptoms? Well, there are two responses. Either it's the same symptoms as flu, or it's a PCR test. Both of those are problematic right off the bat. Because number one, if the symptoms are the same as flu, then they are not atypical. The claim from day one was that this is a novel disease, which means that the symptoms should be atypical. There should be something that has not yet been seen. But this is not the case. This hasn't happened. The second part of the problem is PCR test. And the PCR test is completely fraudulent. All right. So PCR was developed by Carey Mullis, and he won the Nobel Prize for it. And he explicitly stated that the purpose of PCR is not to look for viruses, and that it says nothing about infection. Christian Drosten, however, in the beginning of 2020, worked a little bit with the scientists in Wuhan and developed a genome sequence for SARS-CoV-2, which was largely based on the genome sequence of SARS-CoV-1. From 2003. He then developed the PCR test protocol for this particular virus, and it was peer reviewed and published within 48 hours, which is unheard of, because peer review normally takes months. The WHO published the PCR test protocol from Christian Drosten, and that became widely used. Everybody around the world used it. However, as the Corman-Drosten review paper, which was submitted to Eurosurveillance in 2020, authored by over 20 scientists, showed and concluded that this particular PCR test is completely unfit for purpose. So the next question is, okay, well, if there are no symptoms, or if the symptoms are not atypical, or if the symptoms are the same as flu, how do you know you have COVID? Well, we have a PCR test. Well, this is the first time, or maybe the second time, if you include AIDS, the second time that a disease or a syndrome has absolutely no clinical diagnosis, which is precisely why the PCR test was imposed, which also then led to other problems, because what is defined as an infection? And the term infection became completely abused because anybody who showed positive on a PCR test was deemed as infected. But this is ridiculous because that's where the term asymptomatic carrier came from, which is essentially saying that a healthy person now is a biohazard. Then the next response is, well, I experienced something that I've never experienced before, like loss of smell or taste or some severe symptoms, right? But this is not objective medicine. Are you suggesting then that before 2020, people didn't come down with severe flu? Of course they did. Which is also why the term flu was removed from the lexicon. Flu is gone. Nobody ever talks about flu anymore. It's just completely gone. And that's simply because, in my view, flu is rebranded as COVID-19 with the same symptoms. What created, I believe, severe responses were all the mitigation measures, from lockdowns to isolation to masks to social distancing, etc., etc. Absolutely insane mitigation measures for what I believe to be a propaganda campaign. But why would the propaganda campaign have been in existence? Well, in my view, to usher in essentially a new world order, to usher in a new financial system, strongly, strongly founded on digital ID, central bank digital currencies, massively increased surveillance, and of course the biosecurity state. You know, this is an extension of what happened after 9/11. But the COVID virus loop is that people are so stuck, that I've at least engaged with, people are so stuck in the idea that it must be real, that there can be no exit strategy. Everything ends up back at, well, it is real because I said so. And that's the loop. That's the Hotel California syndrome. It might be true that it is real, but there just is no evidence of it. It also might be true that it's not real. And if it's true that it's not real, what does this mean? It means that we've been duped. And that is a paradigm shift that people just simply don't want to even consider. It's just too big. It's too daunting. And it just creates too much anxiety. I wanted to mention a little bit more about where I think the loop actually is designed to take us. But I think what I'm going to do is I'll chat about it with my guests. So let's do that. So you're listening to TNT Radio. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare.
Conversations to inform and include.
It's meant for everyday people to understand.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
James Dellingpole, thank you for joining me in the trenches. How is the information war treating you?
Oh, Germ, it's great to be on your show, and I always love talking to you. Can I just say, this is unlike me, but I've kind of got a teeny bit of good news for you. In that, I think you are being overly pessimistic on the public awakening with regards to the vaccine injuries, with the problems leading up to the vaccine injuries, which are, of course, government coercion and big pharma corruption and so on. I did a show the other day. GB News, I mean, one of the smaller shows in the UK, sort of supposedly independent broadcaster. And I was in one of those panel discussions, and typically the panel was stacked. So there was me fighting on behalf of victims of vaccine damage and so on. And the other two, still, even now, 2 years into this charade, pushing the government's line, pushing the government agenda assiduously without questioning it in the slightest. And I've been subject to a Twitter storm where, you know, your life is ruined for about 5 days by the mob who are hating you. And this was like the opposite of a Twitter storm. This was a sort of Twitter ecstasy bath, or, you know, being bathed in ass's milk or something. People were all over me. People were saying, thank goodness James is saying this. You know, about time. I've rarely felt so loved and so supported. So I think that it was inevitable. What we're seeing now is people looking around and seeing friends, relatives, acquaintances, people in their office, whatever, suffering symptoms of vaccine damage. Some of these people are still in denial. Some of these people say they've got this thing called long COVID. But I do think that there is a groundswell, an unstoppable momentum of people waking up to vaccine damage. And that's good for us.
It's extremely good. Well, I'm glad. Because sometimes you can get caught up in the pessimistic spiral, can't you?
Well, but can I put a damper on that? Having said all that, the people who are responsible for all this, and we know who they are, or at least we know what their agenda looks like. And you're right, this all points towards central bank digital currencies, towards the removal of all our freedoms, the restrictions on our travel, for example, in the name of things like climate change, which is not. It's just they want to close us down. These people are wise to, I mean, they've been planning this over decades. So they knew that eventually people would wake up to vaccine damage and big pharma corruption. I think we're soon going to find, well, we're already seeing it, massive drops in the pharma company share prices, you know, Pfizer and AstraZeneca and so on. They're not going to recover from this. The public is now fiercely against big pharma. But what they're going to do is they're going to move on to different issues to distract us. So people are going to go, I don't trust the government on vaccines, but I do trust everything they say about Ukraine and the necessity of a war with Putin. Do you see where I'm going with this?
Or
I still trust the government on the importance of sustainability and net zero. So the dark forces are going to be pushing new scare stories, which are going to distract the public from their outrage about vaccines, because this is how the bad guys roll. We've got to be wise to their tricks.
I think you're 100% correct. But that's nice hearing that coming from you. When did you start figuring these things out?
Because Mr. Sunshine.
when did all of this start dropping, like this penny for you? Because this is something that a lot of people are starting to realize. But you know, people are jumping onto this particular train at different times. So when did you start joining the puzzle pieces?
Yeah, or when did I take the journey down the rabbit hole? It's fascinating talking to people who are awake. And it's
curiouser and curiouser. Myriad,
indeed, yeah. There are myriad entry points to the rabbit hole, and they all have one thing in common, which is that it's the moment when you realize that the authorities lie to you. They are not your friend. They cannot be trusted. They do not have your best interests at heart. They are your enemy. Worse, they are trying to not just enslave you, but perhaps even to poison you and kill you. In fact, they enjoy tormenting you on some level. The higher up people, I think, are psychopaths. And by the way, it's no coincidence that when companies are recruiting a CEO, they tend to search for psychopathy. These are the values that are sought in the controlling elite. So it's no wonder things are as they are. For me, oddly enough, it was the Biden presidency, the stolen presidential election. Now, what shocked me as a journalist, I spent 30 years as a mainstream media journalist. I believed everything that they told me, you know, because after all, I was part of the propaganda machine. I didn't know I was part of a propaganda machine. I thought journalist's job was to tell the truth, and that the reason we became journalists was because unsuited to any other job. We wouldn't toe the line. We wouldn't obey stupid orders. We were curious. We wanted to find out the truth regardless of what it might cost us. When I saw how these stories were emerging about all sorts of trickery and skullduggery going on in the American presidential election, which have now been confirmed by that Dinesh D'Souza film, 2000 Mules. You know, it's all out in the open now. But what astonished me was that even journalists that I had considered my kind of my fellow fighters in the trenches, you know, that staunchly standing shoulder to shoulder fighting against the enemy, that these, none of these people wanted to stick their head above the parapet and say, well, hang on, guys, there's something about this election which isn't quite right. Here's all the evidence. Instead, they towed the line. They did not even show curiosity about this. And I was thinking, well, hang on a second. If the media isn't doing its job, if it's actually confirming what so-called conspiracy theorists have long said, which is that the media is a lie machine, then what else about my previously cherished paradigm is false? What other things Correct. About the world that I've been told are true are not true? So that was my entry point. And you know, for different people, it's a different way in. Some people it goes as far back as the Kennedy assassination. Some people talk about 9/11 and so on. Everyone has a different entry point, but it amounts to the same thing. It's learning to distrust authority.
What else from the authorities do you distrust?
Pretty much everything. I distrust history.
Good man.
The history as it's taught to us. Look, I am so interested in history because you can only understand the president if you understand the past. Because things that happened in the past explain where we are today, how we got here. So there's lots I don't. Okay, I'll give you an example. This is one of my theories, by the way. One of my theories is the things that we are most taught at school and that are most emphasized as things we should believe are almost certainly the things we should most distrust. I'll give you a classic example of this. If there's one thing everyone knows about vaccination, it's that it started with a guy called Louis Pasteur, who observed something. Edward Jenner, who observed something fascinating about milkmaids, that milkmaids had a perfect complexion, unlike other people who were sort of ravaged by pustulous spots. And it was because, thanks to cowpox, that dairy maids had an inbuilt immunity to the pox. Therefore, he created this vaccine and yada, yada, yada. And we know. So instantly we think, well, vaccines are a wonderful thing. They give me a beautiful, clear complexion. And, you know, it goes on from there. That we are programmed to think vaccines are perhaps the greatest miracle of medical science. And without vaccines, we'd all be dying in droves like they did back in the dark days before we had educated doctors who were wise to all the wonderful things that the pharmaceutical industry provide us with. You know, we're told about the past that the past was so dangerous that you basically couldn't on your immune system because you were going to die because you didn't have medical technology. Whereas now we're in a golden age. None of this stuff is true.
I agree with you. And whenever the term denialist or denial or conspiracy theorist gets used, that's when you know you really should be hanging around that territory.
Oh, totally. And do you know what? I mean, we are programmed as a culture to be very wary of the man in the tinfoil hat, because that's how anyone who's a conspiracy theorist has been a so-called conspiracy theorist has been categorized. I mean, as you know, the phrase was devised by the CIA and put in their briefing documents in the wake of the Kennedy assassination and the Warren report, designed to marginalize and stigmatize all those very sensible, informed people who are saying, hang on a second, it's not quite as it's being presented to us by the authorities. You know, that there's something that stinks about this. So anyone who questioned it was automatically written off as a kind of marginal figure who was not to be trusted, who should be ridiculed. By the way, there was a fantastic joke I saw on social media today, which is somebody saying, why did nobody warn us about the vaccine dangers? And the reply comes, we did, but you sent us back a picture of somebody wearing a tinfoil hat. It's sadly the case that the people who've been written off as lunatic fringe have had it right all along, because all these things that are dismissed as conspiracy theories, things to do with everything from the moon landing to the landings to the Kennedy assassination to the right back to the causes of the First and Second World War, going back to the history of the French Revolution, the stuff that we are told in schools is propaganda. It is not, and the historians, the mainstream historians who promote this propaganda are either liars or useful idiots. The truth lies elsewhere, and the truth is unfortunately with the crazies. And I say unfortunately because the crazies are still in a minority, which is sad, because we need a general awakening if we're to get out of this mess, which is centuries old.
The term conspiracy theorist is actually, it's a pejorative, but the thing with that term is that it's actually a compliment if you think about it, because what it's suggesting, James, is that people don't know where it came from in terms of its weaponization, as you correctly pointed out. I think it was in 1976 where that memo came out that you're referring to by the CIA. And then B, it's just another way of saying critical thinker. A conspiracy theorist is just somebody who doesn't trust the official narrative and thinks that there was probably a different truth or a different set of facts that led to the outcome. For example, anybody who thinks that 9/11 was an Islamic terrorist attack today, I think is nuts. It absolutely was not. Anybody who thinks that Lee Harvey Oswald actually, randomly shot JFK, I mean, this is completely bonkers to think that. And let's go 2,000 years back. Julius Caesar was conspired against. So when they say conspiracy theorists, are they saying that people do not conspire against other people? It's just complete madness.
Yes. Yes, of course, the world is full of conspiracies, which are well acknowledged. I mean, Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations wrote about the conspiracy that exists in the world of business and commerce. Yeah, conspiracies have always been with us, and they are generally out in the open, as indeed is the current conspiracy. It's a conspiracy in plain sight. I mean, it's not as though nobody knows about the existence of the Bilderberg Group. It's not as though nobody knows about Davos and the people who attend Davos and what Klaus Schwab, the guy in charge of the World Economic Forum, has written about this great reset. It's extraordinary the sort of cognitive dissonance you get from people who think of themselves as the mainstream, whereby Klaus Schwab, the guy in charge of the World Economic Forum, can write a book about the Great Reset, talking about how the COVID, the so-called pandemic, represents an opportunity to remake the world. I don't think he uses the phrase New World Order, but that's what he means. It's a Great Reset where you're going to, I mean, to quote a previous WEF document, I own nothing and I've never been happier, or I forget the exact phrase, but that's the gist of it. That they can say this stuff, they can produce it on their website, they can write books about it, and still, despite all the evidence in plain sight, people go, yes, but the Great Reset is a conspiracy theory. I mean, how dumb do you have to be to not to realize that something in plain sight is actually happening? It's real.
It's not a theory. It's an actual conspiracy. But James, hold that thought. I'm going to cut to a break. Thanks, Luke.
Pervoy Morich on TNT Radio.
But that's crazy that, like, I can't believe I got this email literally, like, from my hosting service saying they're going to jack it up 10% because of the EU, because of, the whole war in Ukraine and all of this. And what are your thoughts on all of this crazy energy stuff?
Well, I mean, this is a self-induced catastrophe. Biden just canceled leases on the drilling leases on the federal land that he could have renewed. He chose not to. He could unilaterally change the laws in California that have to do with the trucking industry. There are insane laws that say that any truck that's made before 2010 that's gas combustion cannot service the ports in Los Angeles and Long Beach. Everything has to be either a newer truck or they have to be electric trucks, which don't even exist at this current point.
Hrvoje Moric on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Many dogs and cats spend endless days indoors staring at the wall, living for the moment when you will come home and tell them you love them, take them out, and make a fuss over them. Dogs and cats need physical exercise and mental stimulation, things to do and think about in order to be healthy and happy. Please set time aside for them and give them a real life and real love. For more information, please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals at 757-622-PETA or helpinganimals.com. That's helpinganimals.com.
Government today.
They're not human. They ought to be destroyed.
It's like all the children from the Village of the Damned grew up and went into politics.
You can't stop us, you know.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I'm chatting with James Dellingpole from The Delling Pod. I love your podcast, James.
I love yours, Jim.
Oh, come on. Let's not high-five each other. I genuinely
No, we do. Still, actually, no, I'm not blowing smoke up your bottom. I do, seriously. I don't listen to many podcasts. I thought you were one with Andrew Wakefield. I was actually envious of that. I thought, the bastard, I hate Jim. He's done such a good job here. So I do listen to your stuff.
What I was going to say is I have a feeling that you're going to agree with me, but so just for some quick context, so I've been a political cartoonist, as you probably know, for what, 17 years now. And one of the bad aspects about being a satirist is that you have to be an arrogant arsehole. You have to assume that you're superior to the people that you are ridiculing. You have to, because you can't ridicule people who are better than you, right? So you have to be higher up in order to mock people. And it becomes part of you. It's not a really good trait. But in the last 2.5 years or so, after doing podcasts and chatting to amazing people, I have learned that I know nothing about everything. Have you found the same?
It's been one of the best things about the last 2 years since my awakening is it has been like discovering the world anew and discovering the human race anew. And I'll give you an example. I went on quite a few of the anti-lockdown, anti-compulsory vax marches in London, and I met some of the best people in the world. And I don't want to sound all kind of twee here, but there were, it's a bit like South Park, you know, people of all colors and creeds holding hands under the rainbow. But it was a bit like that, in that people were all classes, all races, both sexes. I believe I'm old fashioned. I believe that there's only two sexes. We were all united in a common cause, and we were all loving and happy and friendly. And what it made me realize is that so many of the causes for contention in the world, over race, over class, over religion, et cetera, these are all created by the very elites, which are now doing this terrible thing to us. That, you know, people like George Soros are pumping money into organizations which specialize in generating tension and division. But actually, those of us who get what's going on, it's like we're living in a new Garden of Eden, We understand each other. We love each other. We have the same ideals. We just want to be left alone to get on with our lives, have a better life for our children. If we have children, we want to be able to free to choose the way of life we want. That's all. It's not too much to ask. But yeah, so I found it a humbling experience as well. Because, I mean, I agree with your point. Are you an arrogant bastard? Yes, you are. Now I'm just teasing. I used to think, because of my education, I was one of the smartest guys in the room. I still think I am pretty smart, but I do recognize that there are people who have not had sort of, you know, super duper education, like have not had the advantages like I've had, have not had the kind of the comforts that I've had, who are at least as wise and probably better informed than me. So yeah, it has been a bit of an eye opener and a leveler.
Who has been for you one of your most interesting? No, let me rephrase that question. Which guest on your podcast has red-pilled you the most?
Has red-pilled me the most? I've spoken to so many interesting people with so many many interesting things to contribute. So, for example, I mean, Patrick Wood was fantastic on telling me about the history of the technocracy. Catherine Austin Fitz is absolutely bang on the kind of the financial system manipulation. There's loads. There's too many. If I had to name my two favorite podcasts, they're probably the ones I did with a friend of mine called Jonathan Miles Lee. And he's not an expert in anything. He was a very talented painter who was at school with me. And Jonathan, he's now died of cancer, sadly. I really miss him. But he told me so many interesting things about the world. And also, he turned me towards Christianity. I mean, I'd always been a kind of a sort of cultural Christian. You know, I was raised Church of England and I was confirmed at school. But I didn't realize until I spoke to Jonathan that you can believe in God and believe in Christianity without having to become a sort of regular at your local church, which has probably been compromised by, you know, infiltrated in the same way so many in the way that so many institutions have been infiltrated by the forces of woke and by the forces of, well, forces that really have nothing to do with God at all. So I'm much more comfortable about believing in God and believing in Jesus and all that than I was before, thanks to Jonathan Marsley. And it's a really interesting podcast because he was also psychic and he was very much in tune with the other world. Extraordinary. I'd recommend anyone to, as that's your way into my podcast.
No, and your other, you said there were two.
Oh, well, yes, the first one with Jonathan Lee and Jonathan Marsley, and the second one with Jonathan Marsley, where he really started going deep into the crazy stuff.
So both are the same person.
Well, no, do you know, you put me on the spot. The problem is that because I smoke quite a lot of weed, I have quite a bad short-term memory. So it's quite sort of hard to sort of...
all right. listen, I agree with you on the turning to Christianity. I think it's a good thing. And I know you and I have spoken about that before, actually. And I don't know. I can't pin it. But there's something about the human desire to find higher purpose, to wake up with meaning. Don't you agree?
Yes, but that's the sort of the prelude to one of those kind of Richard Dawkins type things. There's lots of people who Christopher Hitchens used to argue this, didn't he? That humans can't cope with the idea that they're going to die, so they invent God to kind of make them feel cozy about the afterlife. I feel much more strongly than that. That God is definitely real. That what we're experiencing now is perhaps the final stages in a long-running battle between good and evil. There is no doubt that the people who are responsible for what's going on in the world right now, they adhere themselves to to Luciferianism or to Satanism or to 33rd level Freemasonry, whatever you want to call it, they are the enemies of Christianity. I mean, Christianity is their number one public enemy. So this is a battle between good and evil, and you better choose the right side, is what I say, because otherwise you're going to face eternal damnation, just like the Bible warns us. The Bible is a manual. It has predicted successfully so much of what is happening today. And even if you look at it another way, look at it from a secular perspective. Suppose for a moment you don't believe in good and evil, and you don't believe in the devil, and you don't believe in God. Nevertheless, the people who are trying to destroy the world and trying to enslave us all, they respect the Bible as a manual. I mean, they see it as the manual of their enemy, but they're working to a sort of schedule which was written in the book of Revelation. That's the deal. They believe in it.
David Icke spoke about this many, many years ago. He spoke about the Luciferian agenda. I mean, I remember reading his work back in the 90s, and I didn't take it seriously. And now, suddenly, I feel that I need to apologize to him.
Oh, totally. Mm. If ever there was a prophet without honor in his own country, there is the man. I mean, he was ridiculed. Do you remember that awful, embarrassing? I mean, one felt embarrassed for him when he appeared on the Terry Wogan show in the late 80s. Terry Wogan was the number one TV interviewer of the time, and he was, you know, the voice of the BBC, and Wogan just mocked him. And I mean, admittedly, it didn't help that Icke turned up in a shiny turquoise tracksuit, apparently just sort of because of its good vibrations. But nevertheless, it was an awful moment which misdirected us into, because Wogan was, of course, acting as the kind of the voice of the BBC, which in turn is, I think, a deeply morally corrupt and sinister organization. It's designed to as part of the brainwashing exercise, and it very successfully did a number on David Icke, who was absolutely dead right. He was had important things to warn us of, and nobody took him seriously at the time. I mean, I get it to a lesser degree even now, but nothing to what poor David Icke suffered in his life. He was a prophet.
Where do you find the most pushback in your own commentary?
Phrase that in a different way. What do you mean?
Oh, okay. When you speak about certain topics or certain talking points, which of those gets you the most resistance?
Oh, I would say currently it's definitely the war in Ukraine. People who totally got that the plandemic was essentially engineered. It was a brainwashing exercise, not a real pandemic. I can talk about that if you like. But people who are recognized that vaccines, these vaccines which aren't even vaccines, are basically at best dangerous, at worst kill shots. People who get all that, you talk to them about Ukraine and they go, but Putin is evil. He's the new Hitler. Yes. He invaded a sovereign country. There is no excuse for that. They talk like Stepford wives trying to please their husbands. You know, they've been so brainwashed by the relentless propaganda in the media, which has been just nonstop and completely one-sided. There's no question that this war was orchestrated by NATO, not by Putin, you know, by the color revolution that took place in 2014, when a democratically elected president who was admittedly pro-Russia, but, you know, that's democracy. He was ousted as a result of a George Soros funded color revolution, and he was replaced by a pro-Western stooge. And then the Russian speaking population in the Ukraine, especially in the east, in the Donbass, was mercilessly harassed by the regime. 14,000 mostly Russian speaking Ukrainians were murdered effectively by the regime, and so it's no wonder that Putin felt he had a casus belli, had a reason to move into the Ukraine. But you try and tell this to most people, and they think you're a Putin mouthpiece, a Putin stooge, because they've been brainwashed.
It's as if it's as if they finally grasped the COVID narrative, and now we've got to start all over again with the next narrative.
Well, this is what we said at the beginning, isn't it? We said that even though it's great that everyone's finally waking up about vaccine injuries, the danger is that the powers that be, the predator class, are just going to find a new distraction. I mean, Ukraine has been performing that. Have you? I don't know whether it's like this in South Africa, but the number of blue and yellow flags, and until recently they started coming down, the number of blue and yellow flags that you see fluttering from houses, from gardens all around the county where I live, it's extraordinary. These people could not place Ukraine on a map. They probably, you know, they couldn't have told you who was in charge of it until the beginning of this year, or even at the beginning of this year, they probably wouldn't have known. Where did these flags come from? I mean, where do you get a supply of Ukraine flags? How come they've sprung up? This was prearranged by the security services, wasn't it? I mean, it had to be. Where else do these flags come from? Nobody prints these flags or makes these flags without the confidence that they can flog these things.
It didn't really happen, at least in Cape Town and South Africa. Keep in mind that South Africa is a member of BRICS, so we've kind of got this weird relationship with the West, as well as with Russia and China, etc. Although there was some of it in the media. Yeah, there was some of it here, but it wasn't a big deal. And it's one of the things that great. I think...
I was just going to say, it's been great watching the rest of the world, because we've been living under this sort of Western hegemony. I mean, I don't believe in the West anymore. I think it doesn't serve the interests of the people who live in the West, at least. It serves the interests of the elite. But it's good to see countries like India standing up and saying, no, we're not going to join the pylon against Putin. We don't want to buy into this deep state war, which is what it is. I mean, it's vested interests represented by the CIA and other sinister initial organizations. They're the ones who are hot for war with Putin, not ordinary people.
James, don't go anywhere. We're going to take a break. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare on TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
A notable GOP runoff election will occur on the 21st of June for Alabama's Secretary of State. The contest is between Jim Ziegler and Wes Allen, the leading candidates from the 24th of May primary. They received 42.7% and 39.7% of the vote, respectively. So Ziegler would appear to be the favourite. He has also been endorsed by the America First Secretary of State Coalition, founded by former State Representative Jim Marchant, an organisation strongly concerned about election integrity. Much to the fury of the legacy establishment media, the legitimate concerns of election integrity are the focus of this GOP runoff election for Alabama Secretary of State. And candidate Wes Allen is also running a similar campaign to Jim Ziegler on the issue. There's no point denying that election fraud is a serious issue in the United States. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative, this is Viewpoint.
Black Lives Matter use of confrontation and violence has attracted criticism from other civil rights groups. Barbara Reynolds, a veteran of the 1960 civil rights movement, writes that many civil rights activists agree with BLM's goals, but fundamentally disagree with their approach. According to Reynolds, BLM uses confrontational and divisive tactics rather than proven protest methods. The BLM movement protesters have harassed presidential candidates, and critics argue it has become a movement concerned with instilling fear in politicians, white people, and police. BLM has been blamed for worsening race relations in America, Federal Bureau of Investigation has found that homicides of police officers have risen since 2014, and some observers identify Black Lives Matter protests as a contributing case to an anti-police environment. The FBI reported that perpetrators of attacks on police in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and Dallas, Texas, stated they were influenced by the Black Lives Matter movement. Adding to the concern that BLM encourages anti-police violence are statements by BLM endorsing historical extreme-left anti-police terrorists.
Government is no longer working to protect our shared heritage, institutions, culture, and way of life. We're watching their deliberate destruction and dismantling, ready for replacement with something else.
What might that be?
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
James, how do you push back? How do you persuade people to change their views on things? Do you just talk to them? Do you make jokes? Do you give them facts? What I'm asking is, what sort of strategy have you found that works?
I personally prefer the kamikaze strategy and just dive in regardless of how much of a loon people think I am. So one of my best red pilling places, I love riding. I love horses. I'm always happy on a horse. So I go riding a couple of times a week. And there's a disparate group of people, most of whom, you know, are not down the rabbit hole with me. And I spend the whole time persuading mothers not to to give the vaccine to their children. Very successfully, I've saved quite a few children from this, which I'm almost one of my proudest achievements. I talk to people about everything from Putin to Christianity to vaccines and stuff. I don't care what people think of me. I don't care if people think I'm a nut job. I just want to get the word out. It's like, you know, I mean, I hate to come over all biblical on you, but it's like the parable of the seeds. You know, some will fall on fertile ground and some will fall, you know, among thistles, and some will fall on stony ground. And you're relying on the ones that fall on fertile ground, because that's, I'm not going to win this war by being the toughest guy in the room. I'm not. I mean, I'm physically quite puny, and I'm also quite old, I'm afraid to say. But one thing I'm quite good at is communication. And we've each got to use whatever talents we've got to get the word out. And I think ultimately this is a communication. We're already living in the Third World War right now, but it is a war of information. So oddly enough, the people with the power to communicate are actually more useful in a way than young, virile fighting men. I mean, maybe we'll need the young, virile fighting men later, but at the moment, we need just to get the word out. That's the most important mission.
We've got a few minutes, maybe 8 minutes or so. So I want to change gear into slightly more uplifting mode, if that's okay with you, mainly because you and I get on so well. And I enjoy your stories. I thoroughly enjoy your stories. So I've got to ask you, have you seen the new Top Gun?
No, I haven't. And do you know, I tell you why I haven't gone to see it. Because part of my awakening means that I am no longer gung-ho for the American military-industrial complex. I mean, when I was a teenager, I used to spend my whole those bored days that you have as a teenager going down to my local Blockbuster Video or its precursor, and hiring videos, especially Vietnam War videos. I've seen every Vietnam War movie ever made, and my brother Dick and I used to sit there watching Charlie get taken out by the American, you know, napalm strikes and stuff, and cheering the Americans. And now I look at those films and think, I'm rooting for Charlie. I don't want Americans sort of napalming innocent people in a war that was created by the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which was a false flag incident designed by the military industrial complex to drag America into this unnecessary war. And it's the same with Tom Cruise. I'm sorry to kind of ruin the picture of it, but what are these fighter aircraft being used for? They're being used to bomb the hell out of people who probably don't deserve it, never wanted a war. They just wanted to be left alone to get on with their lives. So sorry, mate, I'm not going to go and see Top Gun, I don't think. Is it good?
You are such a, you're such a killjoy. So
I'm so sorry, mate.
listen, why I'm asking is because A, it's a little bit of a distraction for a couple hours. B, it's legit F-18 fighter jets being flown. Little CGI. They actually trained. Those actors, including Tom Cruise, flew real F-18s. That's how fantastic it is. So if anything, you watch it simply for some fantastic cinematography. That's it. It took them 2 years to figure out how to put cameras into those jets. That's why it's so good. Yeah, but I'm with you on the American exceptionalism story. It's obviously part of the storyline, and you have to just, you know, take it with a pinch of salt. I mean, keeping in mind, it's running alongside Jurassic Park, so you know that it's not real. You know, entertainment.
See, Germ, there's another one. I think maybe I'm going too far into the rabbit hole here, but I think that dinosaurs are another psyop. I think that the whole field of paleontology is another con. I don't think that they've got the ages of the dinosaurs right. I think that even the images of dinosaurs that we see in museums are just constructs, aren't they? There were two very dodgy Victorian era paleontologists who vied to go and collect these supposed dinosaur bones and then create this whole industry of you know, dinosaurs are real and this is what dinosaurs look like. So the Jurassic Park series was part of that. So anything that comes out of Hollywood is basically a lie. And it's not, you know, we see it as entertainment, but actually it's there to promote a particular agenda. It's designed to brainwash us and also predictive programming designed to make us behave in a certain way and accept certain things because we've seen them in movies.
Well, I mean, you know, based on that, between Jurassic Park and Top Gun, I think the more realistic of the two is Jurassic Park.
Yes.
But
I'm with you there.
I agree with you. I agree with you about the dinosaurs. Well, sorry? You know, I agree with you. So they'll find a bone, like a little bone that's the size of your hand, and then they'll construct this entire animal, and then they even know what skin it had and the sounds that it made.
Yes. I know. They can't make up the ones whether they had feathers and whether they were multicolored or not. They just make up. Actually, it'd be a great field to be in it, wouldn't it, paleontology? You just make up whatever crap comes into your head and persuade people to buy it.
Well, it sounds just like climate change science as well as virology.
It is like climate. There are whole fields of science which are just junk science. climatology, ecology. Paleontology. I mean, maybe all the ologies are just kind of made up stuff. It's only the hard sciences which have still got credibility. I mean, isn't that what Richard Lindzen said once? Dick Lindzen, professor of atmospheric physics. He said that, you know, that if it's got the word science after it, it was William Happer who said this. William Happer from Princeton said that if it calls itself a science, it isn't a science. So you know. Mathematics, that's a science. Physics is a science. Climate science ain't a science.
Speaking of scary animals, just quickly, when you and I last chatted,
you love this.
I had such a good laugh at your. I laughed at your shark story. That was so funny.
What
you were telling me about shark age?
When I went. Exactly. I went for many years. I mean, this shows how naive I was. My biggest fear was that I was going to be eaten by a shark. And so I decided to write a novel called Finn about this, about my fear, about a hero called Joe, whose fear is of being eaten by a shark. And the final scene is him going cage diving with great white sharks. So I went out to Hunt Spy in South Africa and went looking for my great white shark experience. And what happened was that the first two or three days, the weather was so rough or the conditions were so wrong that we could not, either we couldn't put down the cage, or if we did put down the cage, the sharks just wouldn't show up, despite this being in a place called Shark Alley, where you'd think there'd be loads and loads of sharks.
Yes.
So by the time the sharks came to visit me in my cage, I was just like, thank you, God, for sending these two sharks to come and see me. I mean, they were, you know, proper man-eating size, and they were so close I could touch them. But I'd seen so many Discovery series about sharks that it didn't feel real because it was just like on the Discovery Channel.
Yeah.
But anyway, it could be my shark fear.
Okay. We've got less than a minute. Quickly, where can people follow you?
Oh, you must listen, everyone, to the Delling Pod. It is the second best podcast in the world. Obviously not as good as Germs, but pretty much getting there. Delling Pod, you can find it on all the platforms. It's spelled D-E-L-I-N-G-P-O-D. And it's really, really good. You're going to love it. Seriously.
I agree. It's a great podcast. It's one of the very few that I listen to, actually. So, so there you go. High five each.
Yeah. And I'm on Locals and Subscribestar, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. James Denningpole, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Thank you, Jim.
Oh, it's always a pleasure chatting to you. And I am going to be getting myself a glass of water. I'll be introducing my next guest in a few minutes. What is today? Today's Monday. It's a great pleasure chatting to you here on TNT Radio. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas.